Thank you very much, Tom. It's a pleasure to be back here. Actually, I had the good nice opportunity to give a lecture here back in the 90s. Forget exactly when it was and who my co-speaker was. I guess it's standard to have two speakers. Is it all right, Tom, if I say that, in case you didn't get the word, the co-speaker today was Thalia Zarifopoulou from the University of Texas. Unfortunately, she became ill and had to cancel at the last moment. So I guess it's going to be a one-act show today. Okay, so now let's see here. I didn't find the button. Maybe this is on the side. Oh, this one. There, that'll do it. Okay. I'll bring it into focus. Well, okay, so optimal refinancing of mortgages. That's what I'll be talking about. Most of my research seems to be concerned with stochastic optimization in one way or another, applied, of course, to finance. Now, finance is, mortgages are a big business in the financial industry. I mean, there's huge amounts of capital that is invested that is in the area of mortgages, loans to property owners. And I was making these guesses, but after I made this slide, I saw somewhere somebody reported figures which were, the same ballpark. One followed by lots of zeros there is sort of the nominal value of mortgages outstanding. Also, I saw some figures recently about the nominal value of the amount of course, this is for the U.S., during last year. Last calendar year. It's a huge number. Of course, there was a lot of refinancing going. On the other hand, there is, even though there's a lot of people doing research in finance, and in particular, there is some research on mortgages, the research on mortgages does not seem at all commensurate with the size of the mortgage market. So, I think there's a call to do more research in this area. And, we had an idea and pursued it, and it's led to some interesting results. Now, here's the typical approach. Now, it turns out that there's a lot of mortgage valuation that's done in industry. You see, there's a lot of securitization of mortgages, where they package a bunch of mortgages together, and then they sell it to, say, sell this packet of cash flows to a pension fund or some kind of portfolio manager, and there's a lot of people in industry that are valuing these securities, collateralized mortgage obligations, and this is the typical way they do it. It's rather simple-minded, although, these models, like the model of interest rates, and then a model, of course, what makes mortgages interesting is this prepayment behavior of the mortgager. The mortgager, the person borrowing the money, can have the option to refinance. Maybe because they think it's economically beneficial for them, even though they continue living in the same house, or because they want to buy a new house. In either case, they're going to prepay. And that's what makes the valuation of mortgage contracts so interesting. So to value these collateralized mortgage obligations, you need to first know how to model or value an individual mortgage contract. And this is the typical way of doing it, and the common way of doing it. And I'd like to point out that on the one hand, it's conceptually a very simple approach, but on the other hand, these two little submodels, especially the submodel of how the mortgager decides to prepay, that can be rather complicated. But conceptually, it's not complicated, and so typically Monte Carlo simulation can readily be used to compute an estimate of the expected present value of the cash flow. And so that would be taken then as the value of a mortgage contract and similarly of one of these CMOs. And in fact, there's been some academic research, and I'm guilty of a little of this, which basically uses the same method. Now, emerging very early, though, in this line of research, and this is just selected research, was the notion of the prepayment event being, well, that's, of course, random, and viewing that as a hazard rate, or relating it to the ideas of hazard rates or intensity processes, which had been known for some time in the reliability literature, reliability research, where there you were talking about the failure time for a system or a component. So people recognized that, I think Daryl Duffy might have been one of the first, that, you know, the failure time of a component, mechanical system, is analogous to the default of a security, for example, or it could be analogous to the prepayment of a mortgage. You know, it's a random event that occurs. And I just noticed I misspelled Torres's name in the second line there. But so in particular, some of these mortgage researchers started thinking, referring to this random time with in connection with the terms used for reliability. So it's talking about a hazard rate model of prepayment behavior. And of course, this now they didn't take this very far when applied to mortgages, but this idea of hazard rates and so forth has played a crucial role in the recent development in the whole credit risk research, you know, which has been an active area of recent research in math finance of defaultable securities and credit risk derivatives and that kind of thing. There's another approach in the literature, which is sort of an option-based idea, where, you know, people thought, well, this random prepayment time, you know, presumably the holder of the mortgage, the guy borrowing the money, you know, somehow this is like deciding when to exercise an American option. And so they pursued this idea. And if you know about computing the price of an American option with a binomial stock price model, you know, researchers have sort of tried to transform that idea into the valuation of mortgages. Now, in this literature, I'll list some of the papers that take this approach. In the next slide, though, I sort of am not too thrilled with this literature because of these reasons I list at the bottom. You know, I'm a stochastic, and my background, as much of it, is in stochastic control theory, and from that kind of perspective, I'm not too happy with what they did. Not so much because of maybe some technical things they overlooked, but because simply I have trouble, in many cases, really understanding, you know, what it is, what their optimization problem really is, and in fact, what their model is. It's sort of like they come out with a strategy which they have reason to believe is optimal, but I'm not sure what the problem is for which it's optimal. So to a great extent, what I'm doing is trying to take a fresh approach to this kind of problem, more of a what I think is more of an approach that a control theory person would take, rather than some guy who just knows about American options. So here's some of the literature that take this option-based approach. And see, I've divided it up between these two categories. Exogenous mortgage rates, where the mortgage rates are specified by some stochastic process. And it's sort of like a fixed stochastic process. And then some method is used to figure out the mortgage's decisions about when to refinance, versus endogenous mortgage rates. There have been two or three papers fairly recent where simultaneously they're also trying to work out the mortgage rates. So they'd be specifying, say, the riskless interest rates, maybe yield curves, riskless yields of various maturities, and then they would simultaneously be working out not only the optimal refinancing behavior, but also what the mortgage rate should be. Now, the newspapers that do this, however, they differ from mine because of the way they solve for these so-called endogenous mortgage rates. In fact, these mortgage rates will be, they will depend upon the remaining lifetime of the mortgagers, of the mortgagers' mortgage, the current contract. So, like, if you have a, so there'd be one mortgage rate, so there'd be a, as if you had mortgage rates for all different maturities. And so if a guy refinances a five-year mortgage, then he will take on a 25, let's say they're 30, somehow you start out with 30-year mortgages. If you refinance at after 5 years, so then you get a 25-year rate. If you refinance after 12 years, then you get an 18-year rate, and so forth. So that's what emerges from their approach, which, and that's a critical difference from what I'll be doing. Let's see. So just to sort of summarize what I'll be talking to, I mean, you know, the organization of what I'll be saying. Evgeny Goncharov was a PhD student of mine a little over a year ago, and he developed, what he did was he exploited this, some of the recent literature on credit risk modeling to apply it to continuous time models for valuing mortgages. So he was focused on the valuation of mortgages and the issue of coming up with endogenous mortgage rates. However, in what he did, he assumed the mortgager's behavior was fixed. So he did not worry at all about optimal refinancing issues. But he did this in continuous time. So here, and I'm going to start out by looking at the complementary problem where now the mortgage rates are fixed and we're addressing the mortgager's optimal refinancing behavior. So I'll formulate this as a Markov decision problem. I'll be working in discrete time. And then I'll try to combine everything and solve simultaneously the equilibrium problem where the mortgager acts optimally and simultaneously the mortgage rates are endogenous. And they're set endogenously by the criterion of we want the mortgage rates to be such that there are no arbitrage opportunities in our markets. And this will lead to a specification of what the mortgage rate needs to be. Okay, well, I'm going to, question. Excuse me? Well, more from the bank's perspective of people that are buying and selling the mortgage contracts, not the mortgagers. Yeah, I mean, so it could be, be different. The value of, as it'll turn out that the value of a contract, well, the value of the cash flow for the mortgagers, you'll see in my approach, will be different than the cash flow that my mortgager is focusing on will be different from the cash flow that associated with the mortgage contract. That's because from the mortgager's perspective, if he or she refinances, there might be two or more contracts involved. It'd be a whole string of contracts. So that's the cash flow I'm looking at for the mortgager. Consequently, its initial value might be different. Here's some notation. I mean, you could think of, from your own perspective, if you're a property owner, you know, what's relevant to decide to refinance. Well, oh, by the way, I'm focusing just on a fixed-rate mortgage contract. So capital N, the number of periods in the contract will be capital N, that's like 30 years, 360 months, something like that. So there's only one kind of mortgage today. We have to keep track of how far along you are in this, in the number of payments. That's denoted little N. Little M is the mortgage rate, that fixed rate that was at contract initiation. And C is your monthly payment, periodic payment. both principal and interest. And we have to keep track of the principal balance at any point in time. Now, this stuff is real elementary, so I'm going to go really quick. But you know, just to build up a basic model in discrete time, just the most elementary equation for the time value of money, the principal balance at the end of next period equals to today's principal balance times 1 plus the mortgage rate, but then from which you subtract what your coupon payment. This is paid in arrears, so it's as if the coupon in this equation, it's where this coupon payment is paid in arrears. And you can use this recursively to relate the principal balances across two or more periods. I'll be focusing on fully amortized mortgages, which means at the end of the last period, the principal balance is precisely zero. So this gives us an equation relating the coupon payment, the principal balance at with end payments to go, the mortgage and the mortgage rate. And so in particular, this gives us an equation for what the coupon payment should be at contract initiation. If the mortgage rate is then M, and P is the amount you're borrowing, and capital N is the number of periods. All these equations have, you know, continuous time counterparts. Now, to proceed with our optimization problem, we need to introduce two interest rates. I'll have the short rate, risk. So R is the one-period short rate, riskless interest rate. That'll be one stochastic process. Another will be the mortgage rate. Or if you like, we have a two-dimensional stochastic process. We also have capital K, a function of the principal balance, representing the refinancing cost, the transaction cost if you decide to refinance, take out a loan, for the amount capital P. Now, to make this tractable, I got to make some assumptions, some of which are a little bit unrealistic. Such as my mortgager will live in this house forever, or at least until it's paid off. Will not be moving, selling early because he wants a different house, or retires, or anything like that. There's no default either, but this mortgager will take out a loan, and maybe before it's paid off, we'll decide to refinance, and might refinance two or more times. So given the information about these two interest rate processes, we somehow want to find the optimal refinancing schedule for this mortgager. So here's the picture is worth a thousand words. Here's a typical picture of a typical realization where the mortgager will start off paying C1 each month, say, for capital N minus N1. So with N1 periods left in the current contract, at time T1, we'll decide to refinance. So we'll, in addition to the coupon payment, C1 will pay the transaction cost K, which will depend upon the principal at that time. And then there's a new mortgage period, a new capital N period mortgage contract started. And so then it goes on paying C2 each month, and at time T2 refinances a second time, and maybe for this, and then paying C3 each month, we'll decide to go through to the very end. So that's what I'm assuming for the behavior of, or for the model, the modeling standpoint. So somehow we want to develop a way of deciding, well, this is one typical schedule for refinancing, what's the best schedule? Well, with a discrete time model, trying to do this, obviously, I have a stochastic optimization problem. The natural approach is to make things Markov. Assume the interest rate process is a Markov chain. And so we're trying to to develop a Markov decision chain or a dynamic programming approach, so we need to think about all the state variables. I made a list of all the things you need to keep in mind to decide what's the optimal thing to do. So this is a list. We've got five really state variables here. So knowing the five values, the five corresponding values, then that would define a state, and then the issue is, okay, do you refinance in that state or do you continue? Well, to make this quantitative, to implement this, we've got to, first of all, we have to agree on the measure of performance. How do we decide what refinancing schedule might be best? But even if we've got that worked out, if you know about dynamic programming, you probably recognize that we've got too many state variables here. This will lead to, a realistic problem where maybe you've got a 30-year mortgage, monthly periods at 360, and capital N would be 360, the state space is huge, computational difficulties become great. So to address these two issues, let me go back and tell you more about mortgage valuation. And so this is sort of a discrete time version of some of what the student Goncharov did. Now we're taking tau as the random time. We're focusing now for the moment on the valuation of one mortgage contract, with tau being the random prepayment time. If tau is less than capital N, that's a prepayment. If it's equal to capital N, that means the mortgage is not paid off early. It's not refinanced. Well, we model it with an intensity process, which gives us the conditional probability that we'll prepay next period, given prepayment has not yet occurred and given the current information. And so we'll assume that this intensity process is given, and so we want to address, well, what's the value of this contract from the perspective of the bank, which might wish to sell this cash flow to a third party. Well, we take the approach I've essentially already mentioned, although I should point out that the expectation is being done with respect to the risk-neutral probability measure, and compute the expectation of the discounted cash flow. So we've got a bunch of payments of amount C going out a random number of periods. We're discounting all of those, and then we're allowing that for early prepayment, we get whatever the principal would be at that time tau, if tau occurs before capital N. Well, we could work out a bunch of algebra here, and we get an expression which is of questionable use. It involves the intensity process, all right, but this particular expression is, besides being ugly, is of dubious usefulness. However, we can do some more work using that time value of money equation, a lot more algebra, and we get this rather interesting expression. And again, this has the continuous time counterpart is even more attractive for the value of this mortgage. The first term here is essentially just the amount being borrowed. Now, this shows the value when the contract is initiated, but you have a similar expression at any subsequent point in time. So the value of the contract equals the amount being borrowed times this factor, which is approximately 1, because the mortgage rate and the riskless interest rate aren't reach close to 0. And then what's the rest? Well, up to this discount, ignoring that discount factor, this expectation essentially is the kind of equation for you'd have the valuation of a swap, where it's an amortizing swap, where one party pays the fixed rate M and one pays the first party, the second party pays the first party at the floating rate. So it's, and so you can say that the value of the mortgage is the, at any point in time is the is equal to the value of the principal balance at that point in time plus the value of this kind of a swap. Swap is a basic kind of financial instrument. Now, by arbitrage, when arbitrage considerations, it must be that at contract initiation, the value of the mortgage must be equal to the amount of the loan. If this were not true, you could have an argument that that would be not be an equilibrium situation. So when you use substitute that in the equation I just showed you, that gives you an equation that you can see, which you can solve for the, this is how you get the endogenous mortgage rate, the scalar M, what the mortgage rate should be. Now, let me point out two things. You see that it involves these principal amounts, P's, but you can express these, here's the initial amount of the loan, and here are later principal balances. You can express all these later principal balances in terms of the initial principal balance. And it'll be a linear relationship, and so the initial principal balance will then cancel out through the equation. So this equation for M will not depend upon the amount of the loan, which is what you'd expect. If you're, you know, the mortgage rate for 30-year loans will be the same whether it's a $100,000 loan or a $300,000 loan. The second thing I'd like to point out is that I really should have put under this expectation here, at least for the when you're thinking now about the short rate being a Markov chain, that it's an expectation given the initial short rate. So really what you've got here is an equation for what the mortgage rate should be if, as a function of what the short rate is at mortgage initiation. So therefore, you can think in terms of a deterministic M function telling what the endogenous short rate, endogenous mortgage rate should be as a function of the short rate at the time of mortgage contract initiation. We're going to use that fact to go as we go back to our Markov decision chain. And we can use this to eliminate one of the state variables at the expense of introducing this mortgage rate function M. So we now suppose that this mortgage rate function M is specified, and therefore we can eliminate the one of the state variables. So we now have just four of them. Now we also noticed that you know, for the valuation of the mortgage contract from the perspective of the bank, we should look at the expected present value of the cash flow. We'll do the same for the mortgager. Use the same criterion, although like I was saying in answer to a question, the cash flow from the mortgager's perspective will be different than what it is for the bank who's looking at just one contract. And in particular then, since this minimum expected discounted value is the criterion, naturally the mortgager wants this to be minimized. So that's going to be the objective for the optimization problem. So V denotes the minimum expected discounted cash flow for the mortgager. And so now we can put together our dynamic programming problem. If in each state, you know, the mortgager will either not refinance or will refinance. If he doesn't refinance, then we have this top expression for the relationship between the minimum expected discounted cash flow with n periods to go, and what it will be with n minus 1 periods left in the contract. Capital R here is the random short rate for next period. On the other hand, if he refinances at this time, he pays the transaction cost K of P and immediately jumps to a new mortgage contract which has capital N periods to go. So we can write the dynamic programming equation, putting it together, and if you were, well, so perhaps this could be solved. At least there's one problem, though. One of the state variables, capital P, is continuous. So to solve this, you'd have to do it numerically, and so you'd have to do some kind of discrete approximation. So probably this can be done, but it would sure be nice if we could somehow eliminate the P variable. That would because then all the remaining, we'd have one less variable, and all the ones remaining would be discrete. Well, of course, as you might suspect, the way I do that is by making the right assumption. And that is, rather reasonable that the transaction cost, the refinancing cost, is proportional to the amount of the loan at that point. And if you make that assumption, then it turns out that the old dynamic program is equivalent to a new one, where F is the value function, and now you just have these three discrete variables. So this is the kind of thing we'd like to solve. However, if you sort of look at it more closely, you can see that by its recursive nature, it's not so easy to solve, because in particular, it's not like it's not one of the standard kinds of dynamic programming problems where you'd first solve, like American Options, for example, where you first work out the value with one period before expiration, and then you recursively work out the value with two periods. You can't do that here, because if you refinance, you jump from wherever you are with, say, 7 periods to go to 360 periods to go, but you don't know the value there. So it's not clear how you'd solve this. However, it turns out that with a little work, you can show that, in fact, it is equivalent to a standard kind of Markov decision problem, namely what's called the discounted case. You have an infinite number of periods, so you can't necessarily solve it with just by a finite number of recursive calculations. But there are other methods for solving this kind of problem that are available. You know it has some very nice properties. You know that there always exists a solution. You know the solution is unique. And if you get a solution, if you find the F function which solves it, you can then immediately figure out the optimal refinancing strategy, knowing whether it's optimal to refinance or not in each of the states. So, at this point, this is the optimal refinancing problem that I've developed, and how you'd solve it. You could imagine various ways of generalizing it. So I can talk more about that towards the end. And so, in fact, you'd have something, maybe a variation of this, could in fact be appropriate for, a common homeowner to decide whether to refinance. But what I'm going to do now is proceed to look at this sort of a problem of more in the direction of financial economics, by looking at this economic equilibrium problem, where we'd like to not only think about this mortgagor acting optimally, but we want to have the mortgage rates, instead of being specified exogenously, as they were before, to have them also be work out what they need to be so that the model is free of arbitrage opportunities. So in other words, we'd like to not only have the mortgagor act optimally, but we'd like the M function, which we had been using, to be such that our financial market is free of arbitrage opportunities. So I'm not very good with computers, but I know enough to muddle along with spreadsheets. So I developed this little small problem, which I'll show you in a minute. And then I thought, well, to see if there's an equilibrium solution, I would employ a very naive algorithm where I'd sort of an iterative procedure to see if I could converge to an equilibrium solution. So I said, suppose the first iteration, the mortgagor does not refinance early, then I'd solve for the endogenous mortgage rates. That gives me M function number one. I plug that into the dynamic program and get the optimal refinancing strategy. Then that, with that behavior of the mortgagors, I'd solve for the endogenous mortgage rates, giving me M function number two. And then plug that into the dynamic program again and iterate, hoping that would converge. So here's the problem I solved. Very simple toy problem. Four levels of interest rates. Riskless interest rate can be 2, 3, 4, or 5%. Five periods. You can see the transition probabilities for this Markov chain. Refinancing fee is 3% of the principal. So this results in having 80 states for the Markov decision chain. Okay. Not very real. Oh, and if you went, you know, for intuition about for my results, suppose time periods are in years, so those interest rates sort of are compatible with the time period. Okay, so we start off, like I said, my naive algorithm, supposing the mortgage is held to term, all 5 years, no early refinancing. So from the perspective of the bank, see, the value of the mortgage is the expected present value of the cash flow. To avoid arbitrage opportunities, the value of this cash flow must equal the amount of the loan. So that gives us this nonlinear equation for the mortgage rate M. That's a scalar, and that's a function of the short rate via this expectation operator at the time of contract initiation. So solving this equation for each of the four short rates in my model, we get our M function here. By the way, notice something which is might at first glance seem counterintuitive, but if you think about it, it makes sense. You see, normally we're used to having mortgage rates be higher than the riskless short rate, like in the U.S. the T-bill rate, but and that they are if the short rate is 2 or 3%. But in for higher values of the short rate, the mortgage rate is actually less than the riskless rates. Now, if you remember that swap-like equation, you know, essentially what that says when you solve these endogenous mortgage rates is that the mortgage rate M is some kind of average of what the short rate is going to be before prepayment occurs. So that's, if you keep that in mind and you're comfortable with that fact, then that leads to this conclusion that the mortgage rate can be lower than the short rate. I mean, obviously, if the short, in my model, the maximum the short rate can ever be is 5%. So if the M is going to be some kind of average, it's going to be less than that. Okay, so that's our first M function. Plug it into the dynamic program. The solution is obtained real quickly. And here it is. Now it's a, this little table shows all the states, there's about 10 or 12 of them, where refinancing is optimal. We had 80 states, and all the others, you should not refinance. But I was misleading because, in fact, many of these 80 states are impossible. You know, due to my assumptions about the transition probabilities, you can't get from a 5% short rate to a 2% short rate in only one period. You know, it's like a random walk. You have to go first to 4, then to 3 before you get to 2. So some, a lot of these states you can never get to. In this table, though, you can get to 2 of them. And so, so we can say where I say conclusions, you know, if you start off with a mortgage when the short rate is 5%, then you should refinance if and only if the interest rate is 2% at the end of the third period. And there's a circumstance where you should refinance if you start off with a mortgage with an interest rate of 4%, but if you start off at the levels 2 and 3%, you should never refinance. Okay, so we've seen that. Sort of done one iteration, we've seen that this with these mortgage rates, it's not optimal to that it's sometimes optimal to refinance. So this is not an equilibrium solution. We have to iterate. We have to take this behavior of the mortgager and recompute the endogenous mortgage rates. Get a new M function. So, in particular, we have to look again at the equation for the value of the mortgage. It's a little bit more involved this time because, in particular, refinancing can occur. But again, we've got, conceptually it's the same, we've got this equation relating the value of the mortgage to and then on the right side in particular you've got the initial amount of the loan, and to be free of arbitrage, those two must be the same, and so that results in the bottom equation, a nonlinear equation for the endogenous mortgage rate. And again, it's going to vary according to the initial short rate. So this gives us our new M function. You'll notice that since no refinancing occurs with initial short rates of 2 or 3%, the mortgage rates corresponding to those numbers remain the same. But starting with 4 or 5%, these new mortgage rates are each going to be slightly higher than what they were before. Again, there's this averaging process. You know, this new mortgage rate is going to be this kind of an average of the random short rate. So since the lifetime of the mortgage might be a little bit shorter, that results in the average M being slightly higher. In any event, we've got this new M function. So now we're ready to proceed back to the dynamic program and compute the new optimal refinancing strategy. Luckily for me, I got the same solution. So that meant I converged to an equilibrium solution. Our mortgager is acting optimally, and the model is, you know, the mortgage rates are such that there are no arbitrage opportunities. Okay. Now, I looked at, so I was pretty happy with that until I took a look to see at the optimal value function f, evaluated at, for these four interest rates, and evaluated for at mortgage contract initiation. And I was distressed to see that for two of these interest rates, 4 and 5%, the value F was strictly greater than 1. Remember, originally we were looking at V, the value of the mortgage contract to the mortgager, and with my assumption about the refinancing cost, V equals the loan amount P times F. So with F equals 1, then you get P equals V, essentially. But if F is bigger than 1, that means the value of the mortgage contract to the mortgager is actually strictly greater than the amount being borrowed. So that seems like foolish behavior of the mortgager. In particular, if the mortgager were to simply never refinance early, then you know then it would have been quite possible that the value of the mortgage contract would actually be only the F would be only 1. So it's as if somehow for some reason the mortgager is, you know, maybe I was worried because I thought maybe something's wrong with my model or something is crazy. And maybe I'm making a numerical mistake, it wasn't round off error, but I discovered that the amounts that these two quantities exceed 1 is precisely equal to the expected present value of the refinancing costs. Moreover, but still, you know, why would the mortgager take such a strategy if by not refinancing, you know, the value of the cash flow would be less? Well, the answer is because my mortgagers are greedy. If they see that by refinancing in some way, they can reduce, and given them what the mortgage rates are, if they see that they can reduce the value, you know, the value to them of their cash flow, they will do so. Ignoring the fact that the market prices will change, mortgage rates will then change, so that what they're doing will then result in a situation like this. So in other words, our mortgagers shoot themselves in the foot by being so greedy. Because actually what we've got is like a two-person non-zero-sum game, where one player acts to, namely the mortgager, acts to minimize the value of the cash flow, and the other player is like the market, who chooses mortgage rates to make sure the market is free of arbitrage opportunities. So since a mortgager is greedy, you can end up in a situation like this, where you might end up in an equilibrium solution which might have been worse off than if he hadn't been so greedy and maybe decided, well, with an interest rate of 4%, I won't refinance. One of the issues to look at is that often arises as well. In general, how do we know there exists a solution to this equilibrium problem? And if there does exist a solution, how do we know the solution is unique? Well, I was able to answer that by transforming my problem, where you know, I had an old, you know, I was solving like an iterative fashion, a dynamic programming problem along with this relationship for having endogenous mortgage rates, arbitrage-free mortgage rates, transforming that situation to a new dynamic program where in just one shot we solved the whole thing. So I was able to make that transformation, and this new Markov decision problem has nice properties from which we can conclude, in fact, that for this new dynamic program, there exists a unique solution. We can use dynamic programming theory to tell us it has a unique solution, always has a unique solution. And by the way I did it, I'll know that that solution will give me all at once a solution to the equilibrium problem. Unfortunately, while this proves existence, this does not provide a very useful approach from the computational standpoint. I mean, in principle, gives us a new way to solve it, but in practice, the dimension of this problem is such that I certainly wouldn't want to try to do it. I mean, it'd be impossible for me to do it. Maybe, and it'd probably be difficult for somebody that knows about, good with solving big problems on computers. Although, there's a good chance it could be done. But for a typical problem, where you'd have 360 time periods for like a 30-year mortgage, then you'd have a reasonable distribution of, say, 20 or so levels of interest rates, then the problem would just be awfully big. So I'm not sure it can be solved with this alternative approach. Okay, and just to sort of conclude, I talked about the second point, some of these economic conclusions. They talked about these greedy mortgagers. They're overly eager to act so as to minimize their, choose optimal refinance. I mean, they're eager to choose a refinancing strategy that will minimize the value of the cash flow to them, or the cost of the cash flow. But they're sort of myopic or short-sighted, and then because in the long run they might end up in an equilibrium solution where they're worse off. Of course, I told you about endogenous mortgage rates, but I'd like to come back to the top point. Sort of doing this has given me some ideas, maybe a little bit more insight about for my personal implementation of refinancing a mortgage. And it suggests, the insight is that perhaps people are a little over-eager to refinance. And I've listed a couple reasons for that. The main one being the third one. You see, the value of the mortgage contract, of course, it depends on your cash flow. So suppose mortgage rates drop. Well, then the coupon payments will drop. That's what everybody looks at, right? But the value of the contract, by modern finance involves looking at the present value of the cash flow. So if mortgage rates drop, so have other interest rates. And so when you compute present values, that means the denominators have gotten smaller, so the present values, well, all things being equal, get bigger. I mean, for example, suppose mortgage rates stay the same, and so the coupon payments stay the same, but mortgage rates drop. So then you take the present value would be bigger. So that's going in the wrong direction. So it's not clear that, if all interest rates drop, whether the value of the contract will in fact be less if you refinance. So that's one thing. But there's a lot of ways to think about future, doing future research in this problem, besides doing realistic kinds of problems. One theoretical issue, that little naive algorithm I told you about, that iterative procedure, I'd like to know whether that always converges or not. There's some natural ways to think about making this model more realistic. In particular, you'd like to allow the mortgager to prepay for other reasons, namely, they, you know, some probability they decide they want to sell their house. Still another consideration is the following strategy, which might make some sense. You refinance, but instead of paying the new contract amount or new coupon rate C, you pay more than that. Maybe you keep paying the same each month that you did before. You pay more than the minimum. Or you pay some other amount which is higher than what you're obligated to pay, thereby paying off your new mortgage more quickly. Of course, this depends on your cash flow circumstances, but if you allow some strategies like that, of course, the analysis would be a lot harder. Maybe something like that would be optimal, and in fact, people do stuff like that. So it'd be nice to be able to look at that. It'd also be nice to be able to look at taxes, because in the States, I don't know how it is here, your interest on your mortgage payments are tax deductible. No, he's shaking his head no. So anyways, and then maybe for mathematical elegance, it'd be nice to look at continuous time versions of some of these models. So that brings me to the end of my talk. Thank you very much for your attention. Yes.